Public broadcasting facing its greatest challenge ever from the federal government. How does the Trump administration's latest action impact public TV and public radio broadcasting from the cities? For decades, conservative politicians have looked to cut or eliminate funding for public broadcasting. The argument is twofold. One, it's argued there is already a universe of channels people can select to get quality programming that was not possible in 1967 when the Public Broadcasting Act was approved by Congress. And two, it's argued public broadcasters like PBS and NPR have a liberal bent that promotes progressive ideas while ignoring conservative voices. But public broadcasting advocates point to the wealth of educational and cultural programs that have taught millions of children, informed citizens, and provided free access to music and the arts to viewers and listeners no matter where they live. We talk with Dawn Schmidt, the general manager of WQPT, Quad Cities PBS, based at Western Illinois University, and Jared Johnson, the general manager and CEO of WVIK-FM Radio, Quad Cities NPR. So we're seeing public broadcasting, radio and television, under fire like never before. And let's start with you, Jared. Is that NPR is being accused of so many different things. And you know that Republicans since Richard Nixon have looked to cut public broadcasting funding. Is this the greatest threat that you've faced?
Yes. I think it's pretty easy to say that. I don't think things have quite gotten to this level. I don't think we've ever had the conversation in front of Congress about that immediate funding since its very beginning. The funding that's been debated back and forth and always gotten bipartisan support has been the two-year forward funding. So that we're talking about next year's funds or funds for a fiscal year that are about to start in about 2 weeks for me. That's a big and different than what we've done in the past.
How does it affect public television? I mean, the funding from federal money, how does that impact a local station like WQPT?
It has a huge impact. Of the money that's appropriated to CPB, 70% of it goes to stations. And so for small rural stations like WQPT, it's so critical to our mission.
Well, and let's talk about CPB, which is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which was the funding arm that was created in 1967 in order to allocate money for public television and public radio. Public television depends on CPR money more than public radio?
Correct. I believe it's 75% of the funds go to public television.
The split. So 75% of the funds go to public television and 25% to public radio.
So for public television, it's a huge amount of money. So a loss of that means what?
It's critical. It means for stations like WQPT, their educational outreach mission is it just can't continue the way it used to.
So cuts, going dark? I mean, is that when you think of public television, you think of the larger stations, like in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, in New York, and they seem to be prospering and they get endowments, they get tons of money. But smaller stations, especially in Illinois, where there isn't a big, like, Iowa Public Television or Wisconsin Public Television or Minnesota, that doesn't exist in Illinois.
Correct. Nationwide, there are stations that are at risk of going dark if we lose federal funding. Here locally, we are choosing to stay optimistic, but we are looking at our operations and what will need to happen if the worst case scenario happens.
And do you feel the worst case scenario is going to happen because of what you're hearing from the White House or even from Republicans in Congress?
Well, if you listen to just that side, yeah, it is very scary. But we also know that we have very strong bipartisan support. And so we remain optimistic because even at, you know, in APTS and PBS is sending down that message to us that we should be positive, that we do have hope, that this isn't hopeless, that we just need our community and our viewers' support to reach out to our senators right now. And we can win this fight.
Like you said, there is bipartisan support.
Yeah, and even in this bill that just passed, We're hearing reports.
This is the House that. The House, the big, beautiful bill.
This is the rescission cut that came just after. So the big, beautiful bill is already over in the Senate. The rescission bill just passed. And even some of the Republicans that ended up voting for it, I hear, were promised to maybe put some CPB funds back in later when they do appropriations, right? So this budget process is long. It's complicated. I'm learning a lot as it goes. Yes. So I think, much like Dawn, we're being optimistic in what's a difficult situation, right? Like, the worst case scenario is very bad. For us, it would mean about 13% of our budget. I'm not sure what your percentage is exactly. But those are big cuts and kind of last minute. But I know there are many steps yet to go, and so, you know, like, we're playing it as it comes.
So what does it mean when you see a 13% potential cut or 50%? I mean, you're going to rely more on donors. You're going to rely more on what?
Yeah, we can look to the state of Illinois, perhaps, because we also get a little bit of funding from that. And I know they've set aside some emergency funds for things that come last minute. We can talk to our donors. In my case, that 13%, that might be something I can make up. I don't know if it's the same with 50% at QPT. But I'm sure we're going to do those things first and then see where we're at. And then, yeah, you're going to have to look at operations cuts, you know, maybe personnel, maybe programming. You have to make the budget balance in the end. And so you cut 10% somewhere, you know.
50% would be catastrophic?
Very hard.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what hard. Have you heard from the people that have supported WQPT every year, day in and day out?
We're getting lots of positive support. A lot of people reaching out, sending us words of encouragement, telling us how much we mean to them, what our mission and how we affect them and how much they support us and to keep fighting the good fight.
And we always like to kind of point out is that with WQPT, and I'd want to talk about WVIK as well, WQPT is more than just television. You have outreach programs. VIK's got amazing outreach programs as well. Tell me about the impact in that area that public television provides here in the Quad Cities.
Absolutely. Our educational outreach, it reaches into the communities in so many different ways. Right now we have our Summer of Adventures going on, and our team is out in libraries and community events out in the community. During the school year, we have our first book program where we reach out to at-risk classrooms and get free books in the hands of students and to build the libraries of the teachers. We also have ESL classes. There's so much. Imagination Station, which is our signature event in the spring. So things like that would not be able to continue without community support.
And how big is the WQPT staff?
We are a mighty station of eight.
Eight people. So it's not like it's a large corporation that's running public television here in the Quad Cities.
Absolutely not. We're just a very small, dedicated team.
WVIK, pretty much the same.
Yeah, basically the same size, about a half dozen of us there running the station. And we've got a lot of outreach programs. So the ones I like to mention kind of up top is we run a radio information service. So we call it APRIS. And it's a service that reads local publications, whether it's newspapers or magazines, for those who are sight impaired. Traditionally, it's been broadcast on a subband, so you need a special radio to pick it up. But of late, we've started streaming it online, so people will get it through the WVIK app and through our website. We also are very involved in emergency alerts. So we have a lot of backup systems so that we can stay on the air in the case that something actually happens. We run biannual drills with the local EMAs, so the Rock Island EMA and Scott County EMA and FEMA. And actually also work with the power plant up north. So, you know, hopefully there'll never be a meltdown up there. But if there is, we will be involved in getting everybody safely out of the Quad Cities. So these are the kinds of services that we provide for every Quad citizen, whether they listen to our radio broadcast or not, right?
Let's talk about those that do listen to your radio broadcast often. One of the things that you provide that has been diminished in the industry is radio news.
That's right.
Daily broadcasts of what's going on. Without WVIK, there would be no radio news in the Quad Cities, an area of 350,000 people.
Yeah, that's actually right. We're the last radio newsroom. It's a shrinking number of local newsrooms altogether in all media. That's a very difficult scenario. I often express it when I'm talking about it on air during our pledge drives that the Quad Cities is lucky because we still have a radio newsroom and we still have a few TV newsrooms and we still have a newspaper. A lot of the outlying areas, the truly rural areas that we serve, I mean, their local publications have gone away entirely. People are putting together flyers that they can put on their neighbor's doorstep just to get a little bit of local news out. Like, we have some real news deserts developing in the U.S. At least we still have some here, but yes, if we had to suddenly take a 10% cut and cut at WVIK, that would be a big hit to local journalism.
Well, and let's talk about that, because when it comes to supplying news, you are kind of all alone.
That's right. I mean, not all alone. And actually, I think one of the benefits, silver linings, is I feel like we've gotten a little bit better about communicating with our other news partners in town, you know, making sure that things do get covered. Yes, we are increasingly all alone. That's true.
I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that without public television or public radio, there are areas of expertise that are no longer done by the commercial stations.
Right.
So what does WVIK provide that is so valuable on air?
Those daily newscasts, I mean, we actually have, our two reporters and then a team of Augustana students that come in every day and sift through everything that's coming in through our email inbox and everything that's going on in town. Already it's very difficult for us to, like, do any kind of investigative journalism, you know, kind of those more in-depth things, because we just don't have the staff for that. But just keeping our local listener informed of what's happening around town, whether it's events or what's going on in city council, decisions that were made that are going to impact, you know, what's going on in their schools or the local streets, getting all of that to air so that our listeners can remain active in the community. It's a vital service to the Quad Cities.
And for WQPT, that people have been able to enjoy is a number of documentaries, more in-depth looks at certain issues. And it's something that's been ongoing by this TV station that isn't being done elsewhere.
Absolutely. When we started it, you might know we have a public affairs program. It's absolutely amazing. But when we started it 15 years ago,
right, this program,
you know,
started
this was
in November.
The only public affairs program at that time, and it has continued. We have an absolutely amazing host.
Well, you're very kind. I was thinking more of other things that you're doing.
And then we have our local productions.
That's exactly it,
yes. We just
did
Wharton Fieldhouse, House of Legacy, excuse me. Had amazing community response. It was a story that the community has wanted told for a long time. So, and then we have the Lizzie McGee story down in Macomb about the real beginnings of Monopoly. And we've told so many other stories locally, and between our stories of service, which we're featuring, or where we featured local veterans. You know, it's just important stories about our community that we are highlighting and bringing to light.
Is it the key for WQPT, and I'll ask the same thing for WVIK, is that it is local? I mean, like I was saying earlier, is that, and I don't mean to dismiss other states, but Wisconsin Public Television is very Madison-centric. Minnesota Public TV and radio, very Twin Cities. Iowa Public TV and radio, Johnston and Des Moines. Is it important that that there's a local flavor here?
Absolutely it is. You know, there are other signals that reach this area, but we're the ones who are in the community, we're in the schools, we're doing outreach, we're listening to the voices that of our community and wanting to uplift those voices.
Same thing with WVIK.
Absolutely. I mean, both in, we hear from our donors all the time during pledge drives, they appreciate those local things. And when they do find a program on another station in town that they want to listen to, they're always coming back because of that local content. And then when you look at the ratings, because we do get to look at those, you know, I think people just find WVIK reflects what they're looking for much more than a statewide service. And this is actually one of the things that kind of worries me about this current environment. Because I know for me, if I had to find a way to cut and then replace like 10% of our services, you know, joining with an Illinois statewide service might be an option. And I would hate to ever lose kind of that local presence of WVIK, the Quad Cities public radio station right here. But when you have these kinds of cuts, those are the things that come into conversations.
The real criticism of public broadcasting is twofold. One is that you can get 1,000 different stations on satellite or streaming. And number two is that it's a liberal bent when it comes to coverage. Let's start with NPR and radio. You hear that criticism a lot. Let's start with the liberal bent. Is it that public radio is more progressive than perhaps the general public?
So I don't think that that's true. The two things I would like to point out is one, that often those critiques are leveled at like NPR and PBS, right? The kind of the national brands that people are aware of. But the support we're talking about is almost all coming to our local stations, and I don't get those kinds of complaints about our local coverage. When we're out there doing news, people on both sides of the aisle everywhere are just appreciative that we're out there and covering these important stories, interviewing everybody, no matter what their party is, you know, who's running for office here for a local office. Like, and even when I met recently with a lot of our representatives in Washington, D.C., that's the first thing they said is that they really appreciate our local services, and that was people from both parties. So I really don't think that it is definitely not true of WVIK. And then of the national brand, I just think it's very difficult. We see in survey after survey, and even recent ones, that NPR and PBS are two of the most trusted brands in news nationwide. But when you're talking about any service that's broadcasting to the entire country, of course there's going to be stories that you don't like. I think what we're dealing with right now is that kind of along partisan lines, there seem to be a lot of stories that, you know, a certain group don't like. And what's interesting about that is, like, look at this recent bill. It was actually bipartisan opposition to passing it, while it was very partisan on the other side. So I think as long as we keep seeing that, and that's really what's happened in all of our funding bills, like, for decades now, is we've always had bipartisan support. And we continue to have that bipartisan support even now. And as long as that keeps happening, then I think we're hitting the sweet spot. Are we always going to make everybody happy? Of course not. That's impossible.
Let me ask you that as well, because, I mean, it's not that you want to distance yourself from PBS and WQPT, but it's almost like ABC, CBS, NBC are not the same as 8, 4, and right. 6.
Correct. And you're absolutely right on different things. You asked about the landscape, and there are so many different channels that you can choose from, but you have to pay for a lot of those. And not everyone has the money for a cable bill or a subscription for a streaming service. So WQPT and PBS just remains a free, quality, educational, and entertaining channel for everyone to enjoy.
It's funny, I'm such a cheapskate. You know, on my iPhone, like, those feed me like news headlines, and I'll click paywall, and then I see NPR, I'm like, oh, I can read that one. Right, you know, so I think this is a service that even in the digital space, we're providing free to everybody that, like, just doesn't, isn't being emulated in other places because they can't. I mean, because the commercial model is also really struggling right now.
Well, let's go to that. Is that, as you're kind of pointing out, in 1967, it was created as a free service that was supposed to be targeting people that were either underrepresented and you didn't hear their voices, but also that radio and TV, free broadcasting, can touch everyone's life. Doesn't
Absolutely.
Matter where you live or how much you make.
Absolutely, it can. And it still does. And we even have streaming options. You know, you can stream us for free on devices as well still. So through the PBS app or just through our website, you can still stream WQPT and remain mobile.
Yeah, and a lot of us professionals and students, like, have access to the mobile devices with the streams and all this stuff, but really not everybody does. I know for radio, and I don't know the stats on TV, but I know they're much higher than anything online. Like, radio reaches 99% of Americans, and no other media does that. So to keep good, solid, local, national, and international news available on radio is itself an important thing.
So why do you think that the federal money from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting or any of the federal entities or state entities that pay into WVIK's operations, why is it a good investment?
Like in our case, like, that's seed money, right? That's 10% of our budget. 90% of our budget happens right here in town, right? So you kind of plant that seed, and then you get all kinds of local support. You know, I mean, 60% of our support comes from local listeners, thousands of people who give $5, $10, $15 a month. That just doesn't happen probably without that initial seed, right? Like, we don't have the ability to kind of start and to build a lot of the infrastructure that we build to make that happen. And then you see so many local partners come along. And that happens station after station. You know, like, the amount of money given, it comes to about $1.60 per person per year, which is nothing in today's dollars, $1.60. And that produces the entire public radio and public television system. So it's just so exponentially, like, what you get from that investment is so large that it's surprising that it's debated.
Same thing. I mean,
PBS provides so much more than just programming for us. They help with the transmission of our signal. They help pay for music rights and copyrights. And
all those things you don't think about.
There's so many things that people don't think about that it helps to provide, and the support it provides for the system as a whole.
Well, and as you said, you've been talking to lawmakers. What's the message that you've been giving to lawmakers?
The message we've been giving them is that we're a vital resource for our community. Our community supports us. We're a wise investment. We're reaching the underserved. But they give us a little bit of money, and then we make a lot out of it. Because everything, little bit that they give us, the seed money, we just, do a lot with it. We help to, I can't think of the word I'm thinking of, but we just do tenfold with it.
So what are you telling to your faithful listeners? Are you telling them, brace for these problems? We may need your help. What do you say to the listeners right now at WVIK?
No, I feel like that's very close to our message. We're trying to be very straightforward, very transparent, let people know what is going on and not to catastrophize, right? Some of these things may not come to pass. We're trying to watch them very closely, but send out lots of messaging. And then just, reminding folks that the stronger position we're in now, when and if whatever does happen, it will just help, right? So if they're in a position to give and to support now, it would just be great to get that to happen. Whatever they can do to communicate to the government, whatever they can do to help support us now, and in the meantime, we'll just keep them informed as things develop.
And it's the same thing for QPT.
Absolutely. Our first message to our viewers and donors is thank you. They've supported us for 43 years now. We do what we do because of the community. So thank you, but we need your help now. So contact your senators, let your legislators know that we're important to this community and that they need to keep us around.
One last question, that of course is, you are in the middle of budgeting. I mean, how do you plan for a future that is so uncertain right now?
It is very hard, and we're hoping for the best. So, of course, that is the way we are budgeting, but I'm thinking ahead to what could happen and what can I control at this point in time without cutting services to my community if I don't need to.
Yeah, I'm very grateful to Augustana College, our license holder, because they are allowing me to basically budget for the status quo, because the status quo is still in place. I think once we learn that something has happened, then we'll have to make some adjustments. But at this point, I'm budgeting as if it's all going to happen the way that it has.
Well, it is interesting because WVIK's roots are in Augustana College, and WQPT is in Western Illinois University through the foundation, independent very much as far as funding. And we know that Western is seeing cutbacks. Augustana, of course, is a private institution. How important is it to have Western Illinois University backing WQPT?
Absolutely, and it helps me feel better and more supported, knowing that Christy and the rest of the team has our back, and they believe in our mission, they support our mission, and they just want what's best. And so they're also activating and contacting their legislators.
Christy being Christy Mindrup, Christy the Mindrup. President of Western Illinois University, and this
Andrea
for Augustana.
Andrea Talentino. What,
but sorry, I mean, but to have the backing of Augustana?
Oh, yeah. No, that's what I was saying. To have their support, and really, I mean, for decades, since we opened in 1980, they've just been a great license holder and director for WVIK. So, yeah, we couldn't have a better partner in them. On day-to-day operations, we're very involved. You would never see that on air, but the backside, they're very supportive.
So your message to WVIK listeners?
Hang in there. We've got, like I said, we're trying to remain as optimistic as we can in this situation. We know it's difficult, but you won't be able to find better information about what's going on, whether it's at WVIK or other places, any place other than on our air. So keep listening, keep giving, keep supporting, and thank you so much for what you've done over the decades.
And your message to WQPT viewers?
Thank you so much. Keep watching, keep tuning in, let us know how we're doing. Give as you can, and call your legislators. Let them know how important we are.
Our thanks to Dawn Schmidt, the general manager of WQPT-TV Quad Cities PBS, and Jared Johnson, the general manager and CEO of WVIK-FM Quad Cities NPR Radio. Still to come, the civic spark that helped form the man who leads the Martin Luther King Jr. Center. But first, a look at area events, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off by checking out the German American Heritage Center and Museum for free all of July. Then get ready to laugh at the Comedy Sports World Championship at the Spotlight Theater. Next, head out to the Iowa 80 truck stop to enjoy the Walcott Truckers Jamboree. Then, cheer on the Backwater Gamblers while they compete in the 2025 Central Region Show Ski Tournament. Finally, get ready for the Quad City Steamrollers game as they take on the Green Bay Blizzard. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Next year marks 250 years since America declared its independence in 1776, and throughout the coming year and leading up to the 4th of July next year, we're asking people about their civic spark, why they chose their career, and how it impacts our society. We asked Jerry Jones, executive director of Rock Island's Martin Luther King Jr. Center, about his civic spark, what drew him to be a part of the MLK Center for more than 25 years.
It's really simple for me. It is the concept of freedom of speech. It is the ability to be able to espouse different ideas in an open forum without being jailed or sequestered, especially during this incredible time of such polarization from left to right and even in the middle. This is where we can find middle ground and really push our nation to be better than it is now, to really realize the potential that exists in this great experiment.
Our thanks to Jerry Jones, Executive Director of Rock Island's Martin Luther King Jr. Center. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer, thanks once again for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.